Ah, baseball season. Back in full swing here in the spring of yay old 2023. But before the season began, we had on a special guest on Avery Sports Show. I welcomed onto the podcast Rob Bradford, WEEI Red Sox reporter, Audacity podcast host, and co-author of A Damn Near Perfect Game, Reclaiming America's Pastime, which is co-written by longtime friend of this podcast, Joe Kelly of the Chicago White Sox. So sit back and relax as Rob and myself get into all things on the book, working with Joe, improving baseball, and of course, some Red Sox talk. Without further ado, here we go. Rob, welcome to Avery Sports Show. It's a pleasure having you on, buddy.
Man, it's my honor. I appreciate you having me on. And I'm sitting here. My first day in spring training right now, just got back up to the press box here, and it's crazy. It's crazy that baseball's here. We put football in the rearview mirror. Now it's time to talk about baseball, and fortunately, we can talk about it because, in large part, because of the book. So it was a lot of fun to do with Joe.
No, of course, and of course, those who don't know you, you work for WEEI, you have a couple of podcasts, you cover the Boston Red Sox, Gasky. First of all, like, how does it feel, you know, to be back in spring training, have baseball upon us, you know, because those months of no baseball, even though you're working on a book, it's tough to go out of the game for quite some time, even with the book coming out.
Yeah. So, you know, so I have to do a podcast throughout the offseason. We started this Baseballs and Boring podcast, and really it was, you know, the story dovetails with the book, because last January, Joe and I knew that we wanted to do the book, but we sort of had to get the conversation going a little bit. And you remember that baseball at that time, there was a lockout. It was like, this baseball is dead and this and that. So we sort of started the Baseballs and Boring campaign with T-shirts and social media. And then Joe wrote an op-ed for the LA Times right at the end of the lockout. Say, hey, let's not forget why we really love baseball. It's not taking sides here, but let's not forget why we really love baseball. And I think that, you know, from that launched the book. And then after the book was done, we said, well, let's keep going with the Baseballs and Boring stuff and just do the podcast. And that's what I've been doing all off season. And it is funny to look back at. I was talking with some people today about this. Is a year ago, how down in the dumps everyone was about baseball. Oh, baseball's dead, lockout, you know. It's kind of crazy to think that right now.
No, of course. Yeah, and right now baseball's thriving, baseball's doing good things, you know, with the book. I know with so many athletes, when it comes to books, they would rather wait until their career is winding down. They would rather wait until their career is retired. And Joe's career is going strong right now with the White Sox. A lot of players would keep doing a book until they're on down the road. Like, we know Joe's personality is so big. We know he's outspoken. But certain athletes still say, I don't really want to do a book. So how did you convince Joe and say, hey, just lock up. But I really think you should do this book because you have so many great ideas and thoughts that people need to read in this format.
That's a great question. And I think that sort of is something that when they hear that he did this book, like, for instance, I remember I heard Joe being interviewed at spring training a couple of days ago, and someone said, hey, you have your book coming out. Are you nervous about it? Like, he's like, what are you talking about? But I think that's sort of the perception is, oh, you're still playing. You can't do a book. How dare you? Because you have to be honest. Well, here's the thing, and this is why it worked for Joe, because he's always honest. You know him. I mean, he's always genuine. And this is a conversation. It's not throwing the 2022 White Sox under the bus, but, you know, he's very pointed about how he feels about Carlos Correa, the Houston Astros, and Josh Donaldson, and you know, he's not going to hide it. And that was one of the things that drew me to even starting this process, is that I knew Joe was genuine. I knew he was honest. I knew he wasn't going to hide behind anything. And I also knew this was a great conversation, and the conversation isn't just about Joe. I mean, Joe is, as he points out, he is one guy who has his baseball story. He was a skateboarder who quit baseball and was burned out and wanted to be an undercover narco agent and And you know, but everyone has that story. Everyone not has that story, but everyone has a story. And that's what we, that was the premise of the whole project, which is you tell your story, Joe, it'll be entertaining. It'll be original. It'll be honest. And then, by the way, now go interview Rob Lowe. Now interview Mark Hoppus. Now interview Rob Manfred, you know, because everybody has this story. So I don't know. I hope that more baseball players go down this road, because as Joe points out in the book, it's okay to be honest. It's okay. You don't have to throw your teammates under the bus. It's okay.
No, I totally agree with that. And too many times in athletes, you know, no matter if it's baseball and being someone for myself, works a lot in hockey. Hockey players are very guarded. Don't ever want to give you anything that's as quirky or honest. You know, it's always, you know, team first and we're player before team. And Joe shatters that myth. And there's a lot of things that Joe points out in the book. You don't want to give him too much, but it's like, the honesty is so refreshing. And even you mentioned him talking to Rob Manfred. I think some people might see Manfred somewhat differently, because Manfred comes across in the interview with Joe as, you know, a very honest guy who sincerely wants to make baseball a better game.
Yeah, and I think that's the one chapter, you know, Joe, if he had to pick one where he was probably most proud of, that was the one. And because you talk about a lot of active players write books, which is – and. Well, I'm with Rob Manfred, 45 minutes, and transcribed it and said, here you go. I mean, you know, players, and they've had meetings. We, as Joe explained, he was not a Manfred guy. I mean, he was not a Manfred guy. He had been suspended, and in his eyes, he had been suspended unfairly. So when Manfred goes to spring training last year, Joe had a lot of pointed questions for him, and they came out of it feeling a little bit better about it. But when we wrote that, when we sat down to write the book, he said, listen, why don't you reach out to Rob Manfred? Because he said, hey, if you ever need anything, if you ever want to talk, let me know. All right, well, then let's call him on it. And he did, and Manfred did. I mean, he sat down, chapter seven, and talked about all the things. And like you said, I mean, I think that Joe came away from this and saying, hey, you know what? I look at Manfred in a completely different light.
That was amazing. Although I imagine if you're something that would cause Korea, I don't think it would happen that same way, because immediately you can still tell that there is still a level of animosity towards Korea. There's still a level of animosity towards the Houston Astros. I don't blame him, because I'm sure many pitchers, many opposing players, will always feel that way about a team that, let's be honest, Rob, cheated to win a World Series. And Joe puts out there in the book that, you know, he's not an Astros guy. He's not a creative man. And hearing in the book about, you know, security protocols that were put in place to, you know, avoid an incident in 2020, kind of funny, because, like, I don't think Joe's ever going to actually do anything. But it's like, you feel the real anger of a player, like, hey, you stole a title away from me. I don't like you or your club. It's wrong.
Yeah, and so obviously, Joe understands the deal. I mean, Alex Cora was his manager a year later, right? Alex Cora, and he's a huge Alex Cora fan. Mm-hmm. Alex Cora is part of the book. But the biggest problem that I think Joe had and most of the players had was that not only did the players get off so easy, but a lot of them didn't really hold themselves accountable. Mm-hmm. And so when the book, you're right about the Correa thing, I mean, out of the gate, the first chapter is about his incident with Correa and the pouty face. And what that was about was, these guys are chirping at me. These guys are basically acting this way, and they're not holding themselves accountable to it. And they didn't that whole spring training. They didn't. And so by the time these teams came back from COVID, this was when this happened, when they got into it and Joe gave them the pouty face. And as Joe points out, about how genuine he is. Well, he breaks it down very simply, and I can relate to this, which is when he sees the Astros chirping, when he sees them like going back at him, and he looked at them as the spoiled kids in AAU, like that he had to deal with as a kid. It's like, these are the same guys. Like, they're not holding themselves accountable, whatever it is. And that's why he's like, that's the reaction I would give to them, which is I would just out like boo hoo. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think to your point. I mean, I don't think that. And as you know, also later on, it goes on to talk about how MLB was worried that they were going to get in a fight in the hotel because they almost had to be in the same bubble. And MLB basically had a meeting with his wife saying, please don't have Joe fight Carlos Correa in the hotel, which only made Joe want to fight Carlos Correa in the hotel more. So, yeah.
Oh, man. That was funny. You know, to talk about, you know, just in terms of Joe Stoss and the game, you know, what I loved is that how – what I loved was the honesty in terms of the fact that Joe admits, you know, hey, we have to get baseball to younger demographics. We have to get baseball into more diverse groups because baseball has got the stigma of, you know, it's only for old people. It's only for old white people. It's not for younger people, diverse backgrounds. And some players whisper it. Joe screams it. I like that because he realizes, hey, the next generation has to get involved in baseball. And right now, you know, I'm 30 years old. I've watched baseball since I was a little kid. I grew up watching the Blue Jays. And yeah, I love baseball since I was a little kid. But there are so many kids who are my age or younger who don't like the game. And I like the fact that he is saying, you know, we got to figure out to get people who are 30 under, you know, 50 and under, interested in the game because those are the ones who are going to carry us forward for the future.
Yeah, and he cites the whole like UFC model and he has a big thing about the Dodgers, about how they approach the behind the scenes stuff, and that's all important. And it's not only Joe, you know, like talking in the book. Obviously, we have other people sort of give their perspective of it, and David Price was the first guy that made me aware a few years ago that MLB had a rule against too many colors on a cleat. And I mean, this was like, I was like, are you crazy? What? He said, yeah, they're only allowing you to wear two colors in a cleat. And he's like, that might not seem like a big deal, but think the younger people, they are all about the footwear. Like, they are all about it. All about, I mean, look at the NBA or look at, you know, finally the NFL came around. But they're all about, like, who is doing what when it comes to their cleats. And MLB was basically cutting that off by having this rule. Now they finally changed it. But it's that type of stuff. And like you said, like, whether it's, you know, Price or Matt Strom or whoever in the book, they're screaming from the mountaintops along with Joe saying, come on. Like, MLB, wake up. And you know what? They do, but it seems like they do so late, so much after the fact. Maybe, hopefully, this conversation in the book and elsewhere will, like, push everyone just a little bit faster.
No, of course. I really hope it does. Of course, this past week, Super Bowl weekend, you guys went down to Arizona to promote the book on Radio Row. And what was that like? Because Super Bowl weekend, it's a whirlwind. It's crazy. It's so intense. We'll do it on Super Bowl weekend, do Radio Row, and probably do who knows how many shows throughout the book. What was that like for you guys?
Yeah, so Coop, so my guy Coop, who has been helping out behind the scenes, he actually went for me and went along with Joe. But we had this, you know, the timing of it worked out really well. Joe's in Arizona, and I've been to Radio Row before, and it's like, you know, it's Joe Montana hawking chili or whatever it is. You know, it's like these play. We knew that, especially the day that he went, Wednesday, it was sort of going to be this, okay, we've talked about football enough, but Joe walking around with a baseball isn't boring t-shirt didn't hurt. Being a current athlete didn't hurt. And then when he got on there, you know, I think he did about 8 interviews. And when he got on there, this is what's great about Joe. It's not like he's going through bullet points. Like, whatever you want to talk about, like, I'll talk about anything. And you're like, it's fine. And then, you know, and obviously then they talk about sort of the football versus baseball, but it just worked out. You never know how it's going to work out. You're rolling the dice a little bit, but I think that we had a lot of fun doing it, which was, you know, listen, honestly, this was a big reason why we did this. Like, for him and myself, we both appreciate so much that people like you having us on and helping us push the book. We just want to have fun with it. Like, that's what we want to have fun. And it's an easy conversation to have. And that was the case there.
They try to push the culture forward because baseball needs a wake up call. You know, there are people out there who are saying, you know, baseball has to evolve. There's still people who don't like change in the game. You know, people who are against the pitch clock, who are against bigger bases, who are against the game evolving. And you know what? I fully believe if you don't adapt, you're going to die. And I think this book is going to help push that forward.
Yeah. I mean, I I think that that's everyone sort of understands that now. And we're going to see this with the pitch clock. I mean, honestly, we're going to, it's every, you're going to have some people fight it, and then we're going to be, get used to it. And it'll be, oh, the games are quicker. I get to go home faster, less wear and tear. We just had, we just talked to Dustin Pedroia. He's in camp here. And he said, yeah, you know, I would like it because it's less wear and tear on the body. I mean, think, I remember those old Red Sox games, you know, when they were prioritizing taking every pitch. I mean, those, every game was 4 hours, and that seems okay, whatever. But for a guy, I remember Mookie Betts had to stand out in the outfield longer than any position player in baseball. And that's not good for anybody, you know? So let's keep this ball rolling. I'm with you.
No, of course. I couldn't agree more. I'm privileged to grow up. I could ask you, yourself being a WEE guy, being someone who also covers the Boston Red Sox, what are your impressions going into 2023? I know last year, 2022, was, safe to say, a bit of a gong show. Boston fell in the AL East standing. Just what are your thoughts on Boston 2023 and how they can try and turn things around to hopefully not be in the basement of the AL East this year?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of maybes. I mean, it's basically just a lot of, well, this could happen, but we don't know it's going to happen. And, you know, they've had years like that before, but it's still, there's more uncertainty this time around. Everything could click and they could be really good. But I'll tell you what, walking into that clubhouse for the first time today, it's striking how little star power that they have. And I'm not saying that I always say this, like, you don't want isolations for outfielders in baseball. You have to have good players across the board.
Of course.
But how little star power there is for the Boston Red Sox. That's the biggest difference. So to answer your question, you know, sure, maybe. But there's just a whole lot more maybe than we're used to.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, this year in the division, it's going to be tough. You got, of course, the Yankees are still here. They got Aaron Judge back. You still have Toronto. That's a team that's still on the rise. They're still going to probably be a 90-plus win team. So it isn't going to be easy at all for Boston to even, in the American League, even get a wild card spot. It's not going to be a challenge, really.
Yeah, it will. I think it's going to be a pretty strong American League across the board. You know, and you know, even like Joe's team, the White Sox, you know, I think that the White Sox, I think they're going to be good. I think if they had a different – I like Tony La Russa personally, but if they had a different manager, say if they had Alex Cora as their manager, I think they would have won 10 more games. Like, so I think they're going to be good. And there's other teams that have obviously improved. So it's going to be wild. I think it's going to be a great year of baseball. I really do. Because not only do you have like the stars, we saw a lot of money being thrown around, but I think the younger players, what's cool is that younger players are more accepted now at a younger age, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you're like, okay, you know, that guy's 21. Well, you know, Juan Soto or whatever. Okay. You know what? If he can play, he can play. Juan Rodriguez. Great. Like, and that's awesome. And you talk about getting younger fans involved, that's part of it. Get younger players involved.
No, of course. Yeah, you mentioned guys like, yeah, like, and a lot of guys, also like, guys like Raul Acuna, Jazz Chisholm, someone in Miami who, you know, is on the cover of MLB The Show, who is out here for his celebration, his bat, his hair. Like, these are the kind of guys who are going to push the sport forward. You know, even though the Marlins have struggled, seeing someone like Jazz being everywhere, also pushing forward Bahamian baseball. People really didn't really know Bahamas baseball was like that. And seeing him everywhere now is great.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, I've always looked at the WBC as the World Baseball Classic with a wary eye because I thought so many guys got hurt. They're not ready to participate and everything else. But I tell you what, like the enthusiasm that will happen, it's always a good springboard as long as, and I think this time around, to your point, guys like Jazz Chisholm will help take that enthusiasm from the WBC and actually carry it over to the major leagues. In other words, it's not going to go from the WBC where guys are jumping over dugout fences to celebrate on the field and everything else to, oh, here we go. Here's the regular season. Bah humbug. No, I do think that there's going to be much more acceptance of that. And there has been more acceptance. Look at what Fox did during the World Series. a guy hits a home run in the most important time of the World Series, Ken Rosenthal is interviewing him in the dugout. And and nobody – and you know what? Which is not only cool, but nobody – none of his teammates are giving him the side eye saying, what are you doing? Pay attention to the game. Everyone understands what's at stake here.
No, exactly. And it's funny because, you know, in North American baseball, it took a while to catch up with that. But, you know, watching baseball in, say, Dominican Winter League, watching baseball in Japan, that personality, that emotion, that kind of stuff, they were doing that years and years before the rest of us. So I'm glad we're finally catching up. You mentioned, you know, the interviews in dugout. Like, I want to see what broadcasts are going to do now because we can only go forward into what we can do. And heck, we had player interviews on the field mid-game during important games. Like, that would have never happened
10
years ago.
No, no. And I think, again, there's an acceptance of it. Now, I think that you can't push it. It has to be sort of stuff that actually is organic and is going to work. Like, first, I'll give you an example. 2 years ago, I think it was, they tried miking up Ramon Laureano. I think it was in a playoff game. And it was, you know, I feel like, when you're miking up guys during the season, that's cool. But the playoff game, you don't need people to have gimmicks to get people invested in a playoff game. A playoff game, every single minute matters. And then you get in the dugout and you interview about that. That's great. But, you know, it's just – we don't – I think it's just it's sifting through a lot of stuff. We don't need the Nickelodeon, like, slime stuff coming down all the time. Like, but this pick our spot, the most important thing by far, though, is just having the players be willing to show their personalities and not worry about the brand. Because as we said, you know, this has been a problem. It's been a problem where they are very reluctant. And a part of this is because they're around each other so much in the clubhouse in 7 months. And so I know for a fact that some guys are resistant to it or had been resistant because that they know they have to walk in that clubhouse the next day and hey, and they don't want to be like, oh, well, why did you do that interview? Why were you so stupid, silly or whatever? They're so protective of it. But I think now so many guys are knowing that, hey, you know what? It's okay. When you do walk in the clubhouse, there is like, it's all right. It's all good. We're just here. We're going to be respectful. We're going to do our job, and we're going to have fun.
Amazing, amazing. Robert, before I let you go, I do want to ask you, before I let you go, I know the book comes out on February 28th, 2023, but I do want to ask you, if there's a chance to do a part two on this book or a part three, would you and Joe be up to it? Because I think I could have read more. I would have loved to read way more through it because I feel like you just scratch your surface on what you and Joe could possibly do with the books like these.
Yeah, I mean, I think the great thing is every, as I said, I mean, we went into it saying everybody has a story. Like, and Joe's story is unique. I mean, Joe's story is unique, much like Bo Bichette, who's in the book. He tells his story. He quit baseball to play tennis. You know, like Mark Harpers, the Blink-182, he didn't fall in love with baseball until his late 30s. Everyone has a story. And I think that that's where, you know, the conversation can keep going. And, you know, how Joe gets involved and how I get involved. All I know is this, is that, like, you know Joe. Mm-hmm. And all I know is this, is that you just aren't going to find a more genuine current player who is more willing to go into the approach of, I don't give a crap, but in a good way. Like, I mean that, like, not I don't give a crap like I'm apathetic.
Right.
I don't give a crap like how you view me. I'm going to say what's on my mind and you know, take it for what it is. And by the way, never, ever, like, throwing your teammates under the bus along the way. So, you know, he was the perfect guy to do it with.
No, I could not agree more, Robin. Rob, thank you for doing the podcast. We got to do it again sometime. And I definitely want to come down to Boston Fenway soon and come hang with you at a Red Sox game.
Well, you can watch the game with me in the broadcast booth. We'll have a great time. And also, you know, before too long, when Joe's schedule clears up a little bit, we'll get Joe on there and he can preach from the mountaintops like you gave me the opportunity today. So I appreciate it.
Of course, Rob, appreciate it. Thank you, buddy.